Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Pardon me for using one of the oldest cliches in the book, but there are two types of people in the world, those who keep lists and those who don't. Well, the latter category is of no concern for my guest today, as he has scoured libraries, archives, and personal collections for the list of the famous and profound. The result has been Sean Usher's blog, listofnotes.com, and now the book of the same name. Usher's collected notes include to-do lists from people ranging from Johnny Cash to Thomas Edison, Charles Darwin deciding whether to marry or not, or whether to accept a job as a naturalist on the Beagle, predictions from 17th century chemist and science fiction writer Robert Heinlein, to advice from Thomas Jefferson, Satchel Paige, the famous Negro Leagues pitcher, or screwball comedy director Preston Sturges, whose rules for box office appeal include: a dog is better than a landscape, a kitten is better than a dog, a baby is better than a kitten, a kiss is better than a baby, and a pratfall is better than anything. Sean Usher is the writer and sole custodian of the blogs listofnotes.com and lettersofnote.com. His latest book is titled List of Notes, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. It's published by Chronicle Books, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Sean Usher, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Give us a sense of how you began first collecting these lists and letters that have formed the basis for your blogs and your books. Are you a person that sort of dwells in libraries looking up this old material?
I certainly am now, but I never used to be. If we go back 13 years to the moment I met my now wife, 2 weeks after we started dating, she moved away to Spain as part of a university course. So we lived hundreds of miles apart for about 10 months. And we decided to keep in touch by letter, and we fell in love by letter. So that's when I was bitten by the bug, and I realized just how powerful letters could be. And I always said to myself that I would one day start, you know, look into letter writing as some kind of either a hobby or as some kind of project on the side. And then I did in 2009. I spent days on end in local libraries, museums, and archives looking through all these letters, and decided to start a website, Letters of Note. And then that became a book in 2013. As for lists, I mean, it was a kind of byproduct of looking for letters. So I was looking through all these museum collections, these amazing people's papers in archives, looking for letters. And I kept finding lists written by the same people, more so than letters, in fact. So I put them all to one side and made a note of them. I said to myself, one day when I finish Letters of Note, I'll start a project about lists as well. It just seemed to make so much sense. The first list I found, actually, that kind of triggered the whole project for me was is the first list in the book written by Johnny Cash. It's a very charming, innocent to-do list he wrote. I'm not sure what year it was, but we know he was married to his wife, June, at the time. We know that by the list itself. It's a very innocent list. And I read that and I thought, there must be so many other lists like this, living in archives and kind of auction house archives. And that, luckily, I was right, and this book is the kind of culmination.
Yeah, and in his case, it starts out by saying not to smoke. That's the number one thing to do. It's on one of those old little memo pads that say things to do today. It says not smoke, kiss June, and not kiss anyone else. That is good. But, you know, as you look through this book of lists of note, some of these lists are quite profound. Others are sort of charming in their own way. Others really depict some serious history that's, everything from a London Bill of Mortality in 1665 at the height of the plague, where you basically have, supposedly somebody in charge of keeping records that are noting all the deaths of the week there. And of course, plague is high, but there are also amazing other ailments, from drownings and murders to infants dying of what they would refer to as teething, which that just struck me as absolutely bizarre.
The language was completely different back then. So the terminology was completely, it seems foreign now. But that particular list of mortality, they printed those every week and gave them out in little pamphlets for free. It just seems like such a crazy thing to do these days, but that was life back then. And as you said, you looked at, there's a list of all these different ailments that people were dying from, and then you get to the plague, and it's this huge number, because that particular list was published when the plague was at its height. So it's an incredibly historically fascinating document. But speaking of, whenever I'm asked, what's the most interesting list that you've seen that's kind of historically fascinating? I always go back to the Martin Luther King one. Have you seen that one? It's headed Integrated Bus Suggestions. And
yes.
It's a typewritten list. You can see the list itself. And it was written when black people were allowed back on the buses. And Martin Luther King wrote this list, and it's a list of advice for black people getting back on the buses. Things like, do not deliberately sit by a white person unless there's no other seat. If cursed, do not curse back. If pushed, do not push back. If struck, do not strike back. It's historically absolutely magnificent, that list to have. It's never really been published before. You know, it sits in the Martin Luther King archives, but it's not really been featured in any books before, and I just couldn't believe it to see something. I mean, at the time this was printed, it was such an important time in history.
Right, and not only, as you mentioned, the list admonishes black bus riders to not be deliberately provocative, at the same time it actually makes strong assertions. You can sit in any seat in the bus. Don't go back to the back of the bus. Find an open seat and sit there. And it's at the same time, don't be too provocative, but assert your rights.
Yeah, stand your ground. Take your rightful place on the bus. But at the same time, he clearly didn't want any trouble to arise. It's absolutely fascinating. And to be able to see, because as with Letters of Note, the book, I've tried to track down these original documents so you can see the paper itself, the paper they've chosen, the typewriting or the handwriting, and it just kind of adds another dimension to the whole experience. So I really wanted to find as many of these lists as possible to photograph them or try and retrieve scans of them from somewhere. But it's a logistical nightmare producing a book like this, but it's so worth the effort.
Now, as I mentioned, a lot of these lists are little glimpses into history, and one that was really struck my eye was Evelyn Lincoln, who was JFK's personal secretary, was in Dallas, I guess, and was riding the plane back to Washington after JFK was assassinated, and she created a little conspirator list of who possibly could have killed JFK. Really a fascinating little footnote into history.
Isn't it? And I found this when a lot of the times I look for lists and letters, I look through the archives of auction houses, because a lot of these amazing documents are sold at auction. So a great place to look is their archives. And I was looking for something completely unrelated to this list. And I found a picture of this list on the auction house website. And this list wasn't even sold. It was up for auction many years ago, but didn't sell for some strange reason. And then I looked into it, that part of it's been transcribed in a book, but the whole thing has never been published before. Again, it just seemed like such a mistake not to have this printed somewhere. But as you said, it's a handwritten list of people that could have killed JFK, written so soon after she just witnessed his death. It's people like Lyndon, KKK, Dixiecrats, Hoffa, Jimmy Hoffa, John Birch Society, Nixon, and then at the bottom it's dictators, communists. I love the fact as well at the end, on the reverse of this list is a little note, and it says, there is no end to the list of suspected conspirators to President Kennedy's murder. Many factions had their reasons for wanting the young president dead. That fact alone illustrates how the world suffers from a congenital proclivity to violence. Absolutely astounding to have found this list, and I'm so glad it's in the book.
One of the most moving lists in the book is by a person, a virtually unknown person who through happenstance was in the right place at the right time, and that was Hillary North, who was, I suppose you would call her, a survivor of 9/11. Basically, she decided to run errands that made her late to work that day, and she put up a list that's titled How My Life Has Changed, and is just so moving.
So, she should have been working on the 103rd floor of the World Trade Center, South Tower, I think. And she didn't make it to work that day, thankfully for her. But all her colleagues died when the planes hit. So she wrote this list of all the things that she can no longer do with her colleagues. It's so really, really moving. Things like, I can no longer flirt with Lou. I can no longer drink coffee with Rich. I can no longer smile at Paul. I can no longer confide in Lisa. And then at the bottom it says, I can no longer see the incredible view from the 103rd floor of the South Tower. And I can no longer take my life for granted. So, so moving. And this was, I think this list, or an audio recording of it being read by Hillary, can be found at the Sonic Memorial Project, which is both online and somewhere near the World Trade Center. as it is now. It's incredibly moving.
And I love the fact that not only did she include all the fun things at work, but she also included the coworkers that bugged her too. It's like, you know, I have to put up with his whining or, you know, her complaining or her gossip. You know, it was all this. Yeah. It was just really, you know, it encompassed all the good and bad of work.
Yeah, it was just the fact that you miss the annoying things as well as the very pleasant moments in life when life does change like that.
Yeah. Now, the list of notes sort of come in a variety of categories. Some of these are like sort of these witnesses to history, if you will. I really enjoyed the little note that Walt Kuhn got Pablo Picasso to recommend invitees to the famous 1913 Armory Show, which was sort of the first showing of modern art in America. And he had a list of artists that should be invited. That's really interesting. But they sort of come into a variety of categories, if you will. These sort of footnotes to history, long lists of almost you could call them like grocery lists, but they might not have anything to do with groceries, advice, resolutions, predictions, too. It's really interesting. Give us a sense of the range of lists that you put in the book.
Well, there's lists of contents. There's the famous thesaurus, the first ever page he handwrote for his thesaurus. There's lists of advice, as you said. I literally could have written a book called Lists of Advice of Notes. You know, there's so many amazing lists of advice. Address books, lists of resolutions, predictions, rule books of the first ever rules for the game of basketball, lists of favorites, wish lists, shopping lists. There's a couple of them, incredible shopping lists. Well, there's three, actually. There's a shopping list written by Leonardo da Vinci, which he illustrated for it's hard to confirm, but it's believed that his assistant, who actually physically went to do the shopping for Da Vinci, couldn't read, so he had to draw little pictures of everything he wanted. So there's little pictures of fruit and different types of food. There's also a shopping list written by Galileo. This is incredible, I think. You can see the list as well, and it's a shopping list he wrote, which includes all of the materials that he went out to buy in order to make his groundbreaking telescope. It's an incredible document. There's also a shopping list from kind of ancient China, written by some Tibetan monks, which is kind of the things they buy aren't particularly incredible, but just the fact that this document exists, you know, you can see it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
One of the oldest lists that makes the book, and I'm not sure if you have original document on this, I can't remember, but it's an Egyptian dream book from about 1220 BC.
Yeah, we found the original list as well. I think it was at the British Library. So there's a list of dreams and their interpretations and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. So it's things, for example, some of which I won't read, actually, because they're quite rude. But there's if a man sees himself in a dream sitting in a garden in the sun, that's good because it means pleasure. If a man sees himself in a dream mating with a cow, that's good because it means spending a happy day in his house. If a man sees himself in I don't know how they got to that point. If a man sees himself in a dream drowning in the river, that's actually good. That means purification from every evil. And then you've got a list of all the bad dreams. For example, if a man sees himself in a dream seeing himself in a mirror, that's bad. It means another wife. I'm not sure whether that means he's going to find another wife, or I'm not really sure. And if a man sees himself in a dream and he's bitten by a dog, that's bad because he's touched by magic. So there's quite a few of these, and they're just absolutely fascinating. But again, the document itself is a beautiful, beautiful thing written on the papyrus. But yes, it's a great list.
Now, predictions. There are a number of people that provide predictions, and two that I'm going to mention are Robert Boyle, who was considered, I guess, the father of modern chemistry, lived in the 17th century. And then science fiction author Robert Heinlein was predicting what would be going on in the year 2000. What's really interesting is how prescient Robert Boyle was. And while Robert Heinlein was right about a few things, he was also spectacularly wrong about others.
Yes, I think Boyle was far better at predicting things. It's a beautiful list. Again, you can see his handwriting. It's a lovely thing. He predicts things such as the cure of wounds at a distance, which we've not quite worked out. The art of flying. This was 1662 as well. A long, long time ago. The art of making armor light and extremely hard. Making of parabolical and hyperbolical glasses. He even He even predicts GPS, which is just absolutely incredible. Light bulbs, organ transplants, cosmetic surgery. It's just stunning predictions.
And of course, you know, in that particular time, how did you get around the world? By a ship. And he said ships that could sail in any winds and were unsinkable, which we mostly conquered. A few exceptions here and there, but certainly that was, he was, you know, thinking about the future. Robert Heinlein, I think he did predict, I believe it was cell phones and the ability to have sort of every bit of information sort of at your fingertips. But he also thought cancer would be cured. In most diseases.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to him, a lot of these things seem to be, like, we seem to be on the cusp of a lot of his predictions at the minute, you know. Mm-hmm. But he did the telephone, which is number 11. He says, your personal telephone will be small enough to carry in your handbag. Your house telephone will record messages and answer simple queries and transmit vision. I mean, he was bang on with that. But you're right, I mean, a lot of these things. Intelligent life of some sort will be found on Mars. We're not quite there yet. I don't think that's going to happen. The most important military fact of this century is that there is no way to repel an attack from space. We'll all be getting a little hungry by and by. They're all fascinating, but he didn't really get many of them right. But as I said, a lot of them seem to be kind of very close to coming true.
Some of the best part of the book is these lists that are somewhat fanciful and just the person actually having fun. Two that are sort of linked in a way is Edmund Wilson and Benjamin Franklin, who both created a lexicon and a dictionary for the various ways in which you referred to somebody who, as they said in the 1920s, was tight, somebody who was drunk. Franklin has this copious dictionary of synonyms for being drunk. He's biggie, bewitched, block and block, boozy, boused, and he goes through the letter alphabet too. So I actually start at the B's, but it's A. He's addled. He's casting up his accounts. He's afflicted. He's in his heirs. And he goes all the way A to Z.
1737. I could have written a book about just Benjamin Franklin's list. He was such a prolific list writer and a letter writer, actually. He was generally prolific. But this is my favorite list he ever wrote, since 1737. And then 200 years later, Edmund Wilson did exactly the same thing. And I've put them together in the books. So you can very quickly flick from one to the other. But it's interesting to see the difference between these drinkers' dictionaries. Edmund Wilson says things like lit, squiffy, oiled, lubricated, owled, edged, jingled, piffed, piped, sloppy, woozy, happy, half-screwed, half-cooked, half-shot. Some of these are still used to this day, and but there are quite a few that I've never heard of. Full as a tick, loaded for bear, loaded to the muzzle, wopsed down, paralyzed, I've used, embalmed, buried, blotter. I thought it was really important to have them together in the book to see the difference over 200 years.
You mentioned Benjamin Franklin kept a number of lists, and there was another one. You know, when you think about to-do lists, you think of maybe a page. Thomas Edison had a whole different... This is a 5-page to-do list. How long was this for? Was this for the next year? For the next, you know, what exactly? But it was like, you know, it was invent this, work on the phonograph, just the whole range of his to-do list went pages and pages.
I had to extract this list from one of his notebooks. I mean, he kept copious numbers of notebooks. And this to-do list was just one section of that notebook that covered not even a year. So he had, this probably covered a couple of months, this list. And it makes you feel so, so lazy and inadequate. You know, seeing the things he wanted to accomplish just in a couple of months, it just puts me to shame. But absolutely, and a lot of it I don't even understand. You know, it's so technical, he's such a genius. There's another list that is actually in the book in which he comes up with names for the phonograph. For what eventually became the phonograph. Again, it's handwritten, it's from his notebooks, but these are the things the phonograph could have been called. I love lists that kind of show you an alternative reality, you know? It shows you what could have been. Things like electrophone, brontophone, clangophone, bremophone, but next to each of these names, he's written a kind of description as to, you know, why he's called it that. So brontophone means thunder sounder, clangophone, bird cry sounder. It's just a lovely kind of exploration of the English language.
My guest today is Sean Usher. He's a writer and the founder of the blogs List of Notes and Letters of Notes, also author of the books of the same name. His latest is titled List of Notes, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. It's published by Chronicle Books, and it features a whole range of notes, whether it's to-do lists or it's resolutions or just really interesting, funny little quirky things. And there were several that caught my eye. Tell us the story of the fake books of Charles Dickens. This is really interesting.
Well, he moved into his new house, and it was a big house, and he had loads of... I mean, presumably he had a lot of books, Charles Dickens, but he found some spare bookshelf space, and he didn't know what to do with it. So rather than just buy loads of books to put on the shelves just for the sake of it, he got in touch with a bookbinder, and he said, please, could you make up some fake book covers for these books? And he'd drawn up a list of all these fake book names, which really, really tickled me.
Yeah, it's one was My 5 Minutes in China.
There's Joda's Account of the Whale, which is fantastic. On the Use of Mercury by the Ancient Poets, Heaviside's Conversations with Nobody, 3 volumes. The Book of Moses and Sons, 2 volumes. Morrison's Pills, Progress, 2 volumes. Munchausen's Modern Miracles, 4 volumes. It's just fantastic. So we had, because I couldn't find the original list. So in that case, we've either used photographs or kind of we've had original illustrations done. And for this one, we've had this mock-up of all these fake book covers in a kind of penguin style. It looks really lovely.
Now, there's another one that caught my eye, too, which is, in the rules of golf, are absolutely everything is prescribed, but every club has their own local rules. And this is because of whatever conditions pertain to that particular course. For example, if you have had 20 inches of rain in the last month, you might have a local rule that allows you to clean and place your ball back down. But the Richmond Golf Club in the UK in the year 1940, which was the Battle of Britain, had their wartime local rules. And it is, you always keep calm and carry on. These golfers were definitely keeping calm and carrying on.
It's fantastic, isn't it? And this, I found this again at an auction house. This was 1940, as you said, Battle of Britain was taking hold. And the Richmond Golf Club, instead of kind of closing the club, which would be a ridiculous thing to do, they drew up this list of amended rules. It's absolutely hilarious. Well, it wouldn't have been at the time, but looking back, in retrospect, it's really, really funny. So players are asked to collect bomb and shrapnel splinters to save these causing damage to the mowing machines. The last few of my favourites. A ball moved by enemy action may be replaced, or if lost or destroyed, a ball may be dropped not near the hole without penalty. Number 6, a ball lying in a crater may be lifted and dropped not near the hole, preserving the line to the hole without penalty. And number 7, the last one, which is my favourite. A player whose stroke is affected by the simultaneous explosion of a bomb may play another ball from the same place. Penalty, 1 stroke.
Yes, it's going to cost you a penalty.
They were being penalised because a bomb had exploded near the ball, which is absolutely hilarious. That's one of my absolute favourites.
My guest today, Sean Usher, his new book is titled List of Notes, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. And there's advice from Thomas Jefferson. There's Woody Guthrie's, what he calls his New Year's Rulings, Marilyn Monroe's resolutions. David Selznick, censors didn't want him to say, frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn, from Rhett Butler. So the writers come up with about 20 alternatives, which were all terrible.
Yes,
and luckily for us, that famous line was uttered. He overruled the censors. But
it seems like what we could have been listening to the line, frankly, my dear, the whole thing is a stench in my nostrils, which is the most ludicrous line I've ever heard in my life.
Walt Disney's 50 dwarf titles from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. There's one called Neurosis or something. It's something like Neurosis. And I was like, what is this? What is the personality?
Yeah, Nerdsy.
Nerdsy. That's right, Nerdsy.
There's a big O ego, biggie wiggy, scrappy, shifty. But I mean, the ones they did choose, they only seemed normal because they were chosen. You never know. Had they chose some of these horrendous ones, we wouldn't have known any different, you know.
That's true.
One of my other favourite lists, which isn't particularly enjoyable to read, but it's a fascinating insight, is a list written by Einstein. This was in 1914, and his marriage wasn't going very well. And he only agreed to stay with his wife if she agreed to this list of conditions. And it's such an oppressive, kind of misogynistic list. Things like, you will not expect any intimacy from me, nor will you reproach me in any way. You will stop talking to me if I request it. You will leave my bedroom or study immediately without protest if I request it. You will not undertake to belittle me in front of our children, either through words or behavior. You'll make sure that my clothes and laundry are kept in good order. I didn't realize he was like this. Just absolutely fascinating to see another side of someone through a list like this.
Yeah, and certainly, I recall that. It's just like, well, that's a whole different side of Einstein, that we're seeing through these list of notes, an eclectic collection deserving of wider audience. My guest today is a collector of these lists and also letters of note, Sean Uster. He runs blogs for both of those, and I guess you have another volume of letters of note coming out in the next year or so, I guess, or fairly soon.
Yeah, so I've just finished that about 2 weeks ago, and it was it's a really stressful experience producing these books. But I'm so very proud of this new book. It's got some incredible letters in there, and it's a beautiful, beautiful object, and it's even more ambitious than the first one. So I'm really, really excited for everyone to see it.
What was the biggest find for this new book coming out?
Goodness me! Well, there's the kind of centerpiece of the whole book is an incredible letter by a lady called Lorena Bulwer, who many years ago she lost her mind a little bit when her parents died, and she ended up in this kind of not an asylum, but this insane ward of an institution in the UK, and she spent her years kind of sewing, embroidering these amazing letters that were kind of 12 foot long. They're absolutely beautiful. So they're hand-sewn letters written to all sorts of people. So a lot of it's nonsense, but there's a lot of biographical details in there, just kind of detailing a fascinating life, 12 foot long. So what we've done, I didn't want to kind of break up these letters and have you turn over a page to find the next part of the letter. So what we've done is you get to the middle of the book and it folds out. It's like an 8-page gatefold, and you swing the book around and you can just see this 12-foot. It's not 12-foot long, but it's kind of it's effectively 12-foot long letter, all in one piece, and it's just absolutely stunning. Really excited about it.
Well, that will, I guess, be coming out next year, but right now it's the list of notes. Sean Uster, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Sean Uster is the writer and custodian of the popular blogs listsofnote.com and lettersofnote.com. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller Letters of Note. His latest book is titled List of Note, an eclectic collection deserving of a wider audience. It's published by Chronicle Books. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.